Hi, this is Bela Cochran-Petcher, and Merry Christmas. I run Anyway Records in Columbus, Ohio, and I also write, and I have a couple cute kids. This Christmas story is from 1977, and it takes place in Athens, Ohio. Snow was filling the street in front of our house, fat, bulbous chunks of white flakes, peppering the trees and asphalt as if it were being shaken from a flower shifter from God. Small eyes became as large as headlights, aglow in the mystery of snowfall, staring out the window, my small hands pressed against the moist window. I drew a picture of Santa Claus with my pointer finger, where my breath had left a watery canvas on the glass. The sun was lowering itself by degrees. Behind the neighbor's bevy of maple trees, the sun appeared to be controlled by a pulley. One moment it sat just above the treetops, and in the next it was 10 feet below. The dark branches that spiderwebbed pointy silhouettes against the orange sun. Above it all, the dark curtain of December evening closed in like a gray cape. All the while, the snowflakes danced in the chill air, flipping and curling with the soft wind, a celebration of change. Hey, Z, come look, it's snowing out like crazy. No way we're having school tomorrow, my brother yelled from the kitchen. I know it is, moron. We have a window in the kitchen. Come here, I need help carrying my food in, he commanded from the other room. Pulling away from the window, I turned and scampered into the kitchen. There, my brother was smashing a steaming chicken pot pie into a bowl. He had a glass of chocolate milk next to him with a half-empty jar of Nestle's Quick on the counter. The other half was in his milky brown glass and on the counter. He grabbed a bag of Al's potato chips and commanded, "Grab my milk and wipe up the Quick. Hurry up!" Being the little brother had its disadvantages, to be sure, and I dutifully carried his milk in, making haste to hurry back to the kitchen and wipe up his mess and plop down next to him on the white vinyl sofa. It was cold to the touch. Hey, did you put a pot pie in for me, I asked. Nope, you didn't ask. Yes, I did. Those things take forever to cook. I asked when you started. Well, I didn't hear you. This is delicious, by the way. Oh, and there isn't any more milk left. If you want some chocolate milk, you have to make it with water. He managed to get a 2-inch piece of pot pie into his mouth. Look at the snow. For a moment, the ache in my belly was gone, transfixed by the heavenly flakes. Will we get a Christmas tree? It was already the second week of December. The year before, we didn't get one. Yeah, Dad said we would. We have to remind him. I don't even think we hardly even have any Christmas ornaments. He was now slurping the last of his chocolate concoction. We were poor, even though our father was an architect who was terrible with money. My brother had been living with him for a few years now, while I was in the midst of my first year since my parents divorced 5 years prior. I no longer believed in Santa Claus, but wholeheartedly had allegiance to the power of Christmas. My faith in Jesus Christ and the Catholic Church was strong, and the magic of the holiday fermented and grew with the mystery of the birth of Christ. We had nothing in the house to signify the coming of Jesus' birthday, except for the decorated box of Captain Crunch cereal on top of the refrigerator and a box of Little Debbie Christmas tree brownies. Perusing memories from 40 years on is akin to looking at the world through a raindrop. It is small, muddled, and yet aglow with the fuzziness of the incandescent rainbow of remembrance. Living with my mother, we had glorious holidays. In Springs, New York, the tree was decorated with seashells, popcorn, and ribbons of construction paper that folded around the Christmas tree like multicolored merry-go-round chains, looped together with small, careful hands and concentrated tongues jutting from pursed lips. In Virginia, I got my first records, Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life and K-Tel's Hit Machine. And as I listened to Sir Duke over and over, that Christmas morning, I jabbed a sharpened #2 pencil into the rubber belly of my new Stretch Armstrong and secretly licked the red juice that oozed out. The next two Christmases, I was in Athens with my father and brother. Our sister Erica was visiting from Virginia. She was in 8th grade. Plopping down on the couch beside us, "Why hasn't Dad gotten you guys a tree yet? Christmas is just days away." Wow, those snowflakes are huge. They were falling down in the thick curtain of white, almost as large as milky white oil canisters, our saucer eyes beholden to the charm of nature. We had fallen into the trance of wonderment. Z had disappeared. Suddenly he was out the door, his blue and yellow Weebelo hat scrunched over his head, his long 70s a la Matt Dillon and over the edge, hair sticking out the back, wearing his Steelers coat and juggling a Nerf football. Within minutes, we were all outside, galloping in the thick snow, tackling and jumping into one another. Soon, the other kids on the block joined in, and we were alive, the fertile energy of childhood being fueled by the holiday and the wintry mix of snow and the fading sun. Pulling in front of our house, the maroon Chevy Malibu billowing black exhaust into the street, my father climbed out of the car, his black mustache hiding his rosy cheeks. His thick head of black hair was mussed, an arching Hungarian forehead that provided a glimmer of wisdom. He yelled out in his heavy accent, "Let us go get the Christmas tree, children," his R's rolling out of his mouth as if on a watermill, his throat rotating out in static dollops. "Yeah!" Our father appeared to live in his head a great deal of the time, humming to himself while he drove. At times he would smile to a joke only he could hear, and while he loved to laugh, there were times we had no idea what he was giggling about. We started driving. The slushy roads were narrow as small hills of snow collected on the sides of brick streets. We were driving through a tunnel of white as the back tire slipped on the ice. "Be careful, Dad." He turned on the AM radio. Gene Autry sang about Rudolph. "Dad, there it is," my brother yelled as we came upon a lot of Christmas trees. A sad-looking Santa holding a bell in one hand and a cigarette in the other. Above him, a thin, weary line of Christmas lights blew in the wind, shivering beacons of the season. He appeared frozen in the ground as the snow grew up around his ankles and dark brown hair peaked below his Santa hat, a peculiar contrast to his fake white beard. We drove past, faces plastered to the windows. For a moment, our eyes met. His eyebrows arched as he took a long drag off his Marlboro. This was so typical of our father. He had started singing along with the little drummer boy, his deep baritone carving out the rump-a-pump-pums in the freezing cart. "Dad, you missed it. I thought we were going to get a tree." Erica shook her head and gazed out the window. By now we were in the foothills of Appalachia, and the dark trees that stood firm in the wave of snow felt a collective disappointment in our car. We drove for miles, my father continuing to hum and bellow in his Dracula-like voice to various carols. Occasionally, one of us would complain about how he seemed to suck as a father. Soon, he turned up a dirt road, hollowed out of a series of bushes and spindly trees. "Dad, where are we going?" We were spooked. It was bad enough to have a Dracula-like daddy, but now we were in the middle of nowhere, with walls of snow stacking up around us. He hummed some more. "Oh, holy night," croaking from his throat. "That's great. We're going to get slaughtered right before Christmas. Dad, Mom is going to be pissed," Erica spoke into the darkness. As the car curled around the top of the hill, trees sticking long thin arms of black branches above us, we saw a small wooden cabin. Smoke rose out of the chimney to really announce that Saint Nick was certainly there. Dad smiled broadly. "We are here, children. We're going to get the real Christmas tree, not one of these gas station wannabes." I had no idea what he was talking about. The door opened, and a large man greeted us, his gray beard stretched to his chest, wearing blue suspenders over a checkered flannel shirt. He waved us in. "Hello, Laszlo. These must be your children. Come in, come in. I have some hot chocolate. Plus, we can make some s'mores after we cut the tree. We must hurry, as it's already dark. I'm afraid we can't get too far into the field, but there are good trees to be had by the road." The man spoke to my father about the cabin and work. My father had designed the cabin for him, and it was just three rooms, and he told us what a nice man our father was, how he guided the construction of the house and made suggestions. "Your dad is a really good architect. I couldn't have made this house without him." The fields of trees stretched into the night, row after row that fell into one another in the darkness. "I grow Christmas trees," he explained. "It's not all I do, but I own all of the land as far as you can see, this hill and the hill behind it and the hill behind that." We traipsed through the snow, careful not to fall into the small hacksaw. Soon we fell upon the perfect tree, and we all took turns sawing, tying the rope to the base and dragging the tree up the snowy lane where my father strapped the tree to the roof of the car. Inside, we melted Hershey's chocolate on graham crackers and marshmallows, our first introduction to s'mores. The radio played the Morbid Tabernacle Choir as we huddled together under a knitted quilt and listened to two men talk about their own past Christmases. I drifted off as I heard my father talk about Christmas in Budapest, where angels visited on Christmas Eve, and I woke up as his long arm slowly placed me in my bed, a belly of mine stuffed with the magic of Christmas.